We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Let's go there.
With Shira and Ryan.
Oh, entertainment.
Music. Pop culture.
LGBT plus news. Let's go there.
Starts now.
OMG, it's Friday.
Hi.
We made it, everyone. Congratulations.
I just want you to just, I know you try to be creative with your openings, but sis, OMG, it's Friday. Like, what are we? Are we like the new Wiggles on Disney Channel or something?
Hey, they make a lot of money, so I'll be a Wiggles.
I wonder if they do. Baby I doubt
Shark,
they do. I don't think
the
they
Wiggles.
Do. The Wiggles is such an old show that's not even on anymore. It's
I don't
like the
even
Teletubbies.
Know. Blue's Clues.
Oh yes.
Barney.
Oh, speaking of Blue's Clues, the new who's like Blue's caretaker now. He is fine.
Caretaker.
His name is Joe, I believe his name. He is this beautiful.
He's a hot guy.
South Asian man. I've posted him on my Instagram and honey. Wow, he can find this clue.
I mean. It's
Where's
interesting. Yeah, that deserved a bell.
I'm just saying, he is so fine.
I mean, that is interesting when it becomes like they're for the kids, but then you go on their Instagram and they're like doing hot model shots.
Well, that picture had came from like his past stuff before he had booked, obviously that. But I'm just saying, either way,
something
he would have changed my life.
Something for the kids and the parents.
But yes, it is Friday. Very, very excited. You're actually going to Vegas this weekend.
I'm going to Vegas for this Lantern Festival.
Of course. Say other things that are going to surprise us, Shira.
But then I thought to myself, you know, they put those lanterns, it's the ones where you light them and you do a blessing or a wish. I could use some of that right
I've
now.
I've never heard
And then
of
you
that.
Throw it in
Except
the air.
For, I've seen that in, what was that Disney
the
movie?
The movies.
Was it a Pixar movie or a Disney movie? Tangled. Yeah, Rapunzel.
Well, yeah, so the one...
Is that what you're modeling your life after?
Basically.
A Disney movie?
Hey, it could be worse.
But
I want a happily ever after, my friend. But the question I have is, are those lanterns bad for the environment?
Oh.
Like, that's a big thing I asked. And I'm like, oh, no. I don't know
that
if I can be part
question.
Of this.
Because
imagine I start posting all the pictures and they're like... You're killing the environment. Those end up in other places and they ruin forests.
I
don't know.
Guess what? Your lantern is going to like end up in some, I don't know, whale's tummy.
I'm not going to do
you're
that.
You're the
then.
One that killed Baby Shark.
No!
Because your wishes and your.
I have to say
putting
something.
Putting all this good energy into the world and it kills Baby Shark.
No. I have to say something though. One New Year's Eve, I was in Jamaica and they did that. They had the lantern things at midnight and I was doing it with my ex and my lantern lit on fire. And then I was like, maybe this is a bad sign. And that year was a hard year.
Oh.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you freak
yeah.
out. Because at that point, we had been drinking and doing all this stuff. And I was kind of like a bit buzzed. And you're trying to light this candle in the lantern. And I basically was cracking up and I lit it. And it didn't work out for me. And then the things, and then my wish that I had, then, you know, that's a messed up wish because the lantern basically not blew up, but lit on fire.
You know, I think I got lost somewhere in the middle of that story, and I just let you continue.
Lanterns, wishes, it's not supposed to light on fire. That's bad luck.
I do want to say, though,
connect the dots.
I want to update everybody on my computer debacle really, really quickly. Everyone
okay.
knows that I'm trying to buy a computer. The place where I'm trying to buy this computer is actually closed for some Jewish holiday, so guess what? I won't be doing that anytime
oh,
soon.
Oh, Yom Kippur?
Yes.
Oh, they're Jews.
They're closed. They're closed, yeah.
Thank you for the update,
You're
Ryan.
Welcome.
I was wondering what was going on.
I just want to. Here's the thing. If you were going to give a boring story, I feel like I should too.
That was not. Isn't that weird that happens? Like, don't you think about bad luck when you make a wish?
Well, no, I think about this in support of National
yeah,
Coming Out Day.
And you're really trying too hard here.
1 year anniversary of Channel Q. We're going to fly you and a friend out to the home of Channel Q, Los Angeles, California, for a weekend getaway. And if you live around California or, you know, around the area, we're going to give you a staycation. So still apply because, girl, we're going to take you out in West Hollywood for happy hour at the World Famous Abbey. Then we're going to put you up in an amazing hotel and give you two tickets to LA's biggest event and sold out event of the year. It's the Weekend Survive concert at the Hollywood Bowl. Come celebrate Channel Q's coming out and National Coming Out Day in Los Angeles. You literally have 2 days left until this contest is over. Go to wearechannelq.com to enter to win.
Okay, let's get into some what's trending in the news right now. Top of the hour. House Democrats are coming at Vice President Mike Pence. They're demanding documents related to Ukraine. And this is what the letter says. The committees are seeking the documents in the attached schedule in order to examine this sequence of events, including the administration's attempts to press the Ukrainian president to open an investigation into former Vice President Biden or election interference in 2016. Now, the letter also gives the vice president a deadline of October 15th to hand over the documents or the plan on issuing a subpoena. I love subpoenas, like the big buzzword, by the way, of 2019. I feel like every time we say subpoena, we should take a shot.
The demand, what a way to bring in alcohol.
I'll always find a way to bring in alcohol.
We need tons with dealing with this.
The demand comes as it, of course, was revealed that the vice president's national security advisor was on that July 25th call.
Dun, dun,
yeah,
dun.
In which President Trump pressured the Ukrainian president to investigate Joe Biden. The call, of course, then ended up sparking this whole impeachment proceedings by the House Democrats. They also demanded documents connected to a September 18th call Pence had with the Ukrainian president. The White House, though, has said that it plans to not cooperate, no surprise there, with any subpoenas until the House votes on whether to authorize impeachment proceedings.
Yikes.
So it's like the chicken or the egg. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know what you're saying, but you know, I know there's someone out there that does.
Well,
it's all that matters.
There's been a lot of trolls, by the way, this week. A lot of trolls between the Elizabeth Warren. Who are those? Jacob Wall. Those guys, they troll everyone. And then another troll created a very disturbing moment at AOC's town hall. We'll be playing that viral clip right after this on What's Trending in the News on Let's Go There.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
It seems like there's been a lot of trolling happening this week from the right to the left, meaning the right are doing it to the left.
I see what you did there.
You know what I mean?
It's not worth a bell ring, but I see what you did there.
Oh, I got to work for the bell ring.
Yes, you do.
A woman screamed that society should start eating babies to fight climate change at a town hall hosted by Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez this week. And it seemed really weird, very strange, and I don't know who would actually believe this, but here's what this crazy person had to say.
The climate crisis. We only have a few months left. I love that you support the Green Deal, but it's not getting rid of fossil fuel. It's not going to solve the problem fast enough. A Swedish professor saying, you know, we can eat dead people, but that's not fast enough. So I think your next campaign slogan has to be this. We got to start eating babies. We don't have enough time. There's too much CO2.
I get it, because we don't want to, we need less people. That's part of the problem. So let's start eating babies.
It doesn't even, one, it wasn't even believing.
It
was
horrible.
Needs to go back to acting school and really figure out how she can really hone in her.
Deliver that.
Yeah, and deliver. I also feel like because after all the news came out that this was a hoax and it was from this whole entire conspiracy theorist group, I feel like I wouldn't be shocked if she tried to even put on a fake accent, because it honestly sounds offensive in some way that she's coming to an AOC situation, a meeting where they're discussing these things, and she feels like, oh, I have to, one, mark off all these things, one, from being possibly trying to act like she's an immigrant, and then also,
you know. She sounded like she was Southern.
She did not sound like she was Southern.
Can we play that again? I want to just hear. I want to just hear what kind of accent.
You're not paying attention, huh?
I don't know. Maybe.
Climate crisis. We only have a few months left. I love that.
What's Southern about that?
Maybe it's my Canadian ears.
No, oh wow. you guys did elect Justin Trudeau. Anyway,
So this far right fringe group is called the LaRouche Pack, a right-wing group that supports Donald Trump and thinks that climate change is a hoax. And, basically the Trump family was quick to actually jump on the moment as an opportunity to poke at AOC, which I think is so annoying, because why not, bring down, why don't you not say to this group, like, no, this isn't the right way to protest or against the left and support Trump. Like, wouldn't they rather be represented by better people, more credible groups?
No, but here's the thing. That's when you have the that group actually, and according to the Washington Post, that group is actually Matthew Stewart. He wrote a book about this group. Basically, the book is called Operation Chaos, and he dives into what he calls them as to be. They've been doing this since the 70s, and he calls them kind of this political, they're like, it was like a
bizarre political cult.
Yes, a bizarre political cult. And that was really what was interesting because, one, they built a worldwide following based on conspiracy theories, economic doom, being anti-Semitic, homophobia, and racism.
Nice. So, that's a great group to be part of.
They are, they're visually, so basically the Roach's vision eventually shifted, becoming ultra-conservative and apocalyptic. So they are, one, not someone that is ever going to be credible at any time, especially when it comes to this. They are kind of, I kind of assume them to be kind of like how PETA is, where they, you know, they crash celebrities' book signings when they're wearing like fur and they decided to like, oh, I'm acting like I'm a fan.
I mean, PETA
does
take it to an extreme, but I feel this like these well. Folks these are people, just a bit really out there.
No, but PETA most definitely takes it to the extreme as well. They've also connected, they've tried to compare, you know, LGBTQ rights to animals and all these things. Like, I get when you want to be like vegan and you want to do all these things, I understand that's great, but also like there's just some things that you can't compare, and I feel like this is something like that where they're trying to act like, oh, so AOC's whole messaging is, you know, bringing out the crazy progressive leftists,
well, yeah.
and they're talking about eating babies. That's not what they're doing at all.
I want to go back to this Donald Trump Jr. tweet. So he said, seems like normal AOC supporter to me. And then goes, AOC is a whack job, added President Donald Trump. So she actually clapped back at Donald Trump's thing, saying AOC is a whack job. And she goes, better than being a criminal who betrays our country.
And you know this was a deliberate attack on her and also Democrats, because that video, when it hit Twitter, it had almost immediately 5 million views. It was already retweeted by Donald Trump Jr. and then Donald Trump. So it felt like it was a deliberate attack, you know, to kind of showcase that, oh, these lefties, these progressives, here we go, she's pushing that socialist memo again. And so it wasn't something they did in plain sight. They weren't even trying to be
Yeah, but they're using
creative.
It as a moment to get headlines and get attention.
No, it's not that. They're trying to do whatever they can to go against, you know, this election. And that's what they're doing. That they're trying to skew the messaging and they're trying to keep Trump in sight and, you know, in the White House.
Yeah.
They're doing whatever it takes.
So
illegal or not illegal.
AOC did urge the woman to be treated with compassion because she may have been in crisis. So this is interesting because earlier this year, I don't know if you know this, but AOC was stalked and she says very nearly hurt by a disturbed person. So she said in a tweet, I don't take chances and immediately try to de-escalate. So she did what she got to do. But I'm sure this will not be the last of the trolls that we see during this election cycle. Watch out. That was some more trending in the news, top of the hour on Let's Go There. We're moving into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea, Ryan?
Yeah, so coming up in 7 minutes, you know, Chrissy Teigen's new tattoo. Girl, she's being slammed
It
having some strong Holocaust vibes. But before we dive into this, check out Truth Hurts by Lizzo.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, we're back with What's the TR Entertainment Pop Culture Stories of the Day. And real quick, I want to let you guys know. So we are running an amazing contest for National Coming Out Day and our anniversary here at Channel Q. We're going to be flying you and a friend out to the home of Channel Q right here in Los Angeles, California for a weekend getaway or staycation. We're going to take you out in West Hollywood for happy hour at the world famous Abbey, honey. We're going to put you up in an amazing hotel and give you two tickets to LA's biggest and sold out event of the year. It's the We Can't Survive concert at the Hollywood Bowl, starring some of your favorites. I mean, from the Taylor Swifts to the Lizzos, the Jonas Brothers.
Yes.
Every celebrity is going to be there. And a cherry on top, Billie Eilish is going to be there, who just slayed it on SNL, I think, last weekend. So come celebrate Channel Q's coming out and National Coming Out Day in LA. You have 2 days left to get involved because, girl, the contest is over on October 6th. Head over to WeAreChannelQ.com for more information.
Love it.
Now let's get into What's the Tea. because I am ready to spill about Chrissy Teigen's new tattoo, which is being slammed for some very, very, very strong Holocaust vibes. Now, we talked about Demi Lovato yesterday and how she went to Israel and she got dragged for going to Israel because they felt like she was posting all about it for a political statement.
She was against Palestine.
Well, Chrissy Teigen is now being dragged.
Crazy Teigen. No, I'm kidding. She's Chrissy. I love her.
Well, who are you? Donald Trump? Donald Trump says that.
No, I know. So, I just, you said
and you're
that
wearing
way.
Red too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're looking very MAGA today. You know, Chrissy Teigen, she is actually, you know, it was super cute. She debuted a new, or how I like to call it, debutted. Just for like butt jokes and gay. Anyway.
Cool.
Debuted a new tattoo on Instagram Thursday evening featuring a series of small numbers along the inside of her forearm. Now, basically, it features five birthdays in a classic font, including John Legend's, who's her husband, her daughter Luna, and their son Miles's birthdays.
Who else is? But that was a lot of numbers. What other birthdays are there?
I think it was like her parents as well. Yeah. Thanks for asking.
It was like a long
You're really
thing.
Asking the hard-hitting
really,
questions.
Like, it was in her entire lower arm.
Yeah, it's inside of her forearm, Shira, just like I said.
Oh, yeah, that's called a forearm.
Yeah, it's a forearm.
But I saw that, and I was like really trying hard to get it, and I thought it was probably birthdays of some people that are significant to her.
Yeah. Well, here's what's happening. A lot of people, you know, they reacted as I did when I saw it. I was like, oh, it's very cute. Like, no big deal. Legend, her husband, you know, John, he commented saying, the ultimate mnemonic device. Journalist Yashir Ali, wrote, oh my God, wait, I love this. Who actually, Yashir follows me on Twitter, which I love him. He's so great.
Cool.
And then comedian David Spade joked, I use these lotto numbers too. Small world.
There were a lot of jokes.
It was hilarious. Well, on the other side of, you know, because when with the positive responses, there's always the negative ones. And a lot of people automatically was like, oh, yikes, really strong Holocaust vibes. Because obviously during the Holocaust, in a practice, as you know, that practice was basically looked at as dehumanizing. Jewish internees at concentration camps were tattooed by Nazis or sympathizers with identification numbers.
Yeah, they would, once you would go to a concentration camp, they would tattoo you so you know that if someone's a Holocaust survivor, when they would have a certain type of tattoo on
them.
Right. So, yeah, it could be those vibes, but at the same time, like, we need to, like, move forward. I mean, just because it's numbers, not all number tattoos need to be connected to the Holocaust.
Well, I think that's the thing.
People could be triggered, of course. But
even then, that's annoying because here's the thing. I think, what is everything now going to be a trigger for everyone?
It seems like it.
I understand. I think a lot of times people need to get off of social media and invest themselves into some therapy, because if they are letting little things that they're scrolling through, if they're letting them kind of, that is, like, ruining their day, and they have the audacity to kind of talk about how, you know, all it takes is one person to say something negative for it to spiral into this big thing.
I just had an idea. So social media companies, one, they should be more accountable in terms of, like, take responsibility for messing all of us up and triggering all of us constantly.
No, they should.
But imagine this, where you said, you put a comment, and it could have been a trigger comment, right? Like, you're annoyed, and it goes, are you sure you want to post this? Or do you want to press this to connect, we'll connect you to a therapist, right? That'd be a great feature.
Yeah, I mean, I like that.
That
I
makes
like that.
Sense.
Instead of, you know, like those bots telling you about those, like, how do you increase your following? All those, like, and they can slide into your DMs with some therapy databases.
Exactly.
Either way, someone said, Chrissy, I love you. I just wish people were more aware of the connection to the Holocaust when they elect to go to get forearm tattoos of numbers. I really think instead of spending all that time trying to get Chrissy to see, you know, where you're coming from, especially when you know it's a very innocent tattoo, invest in a therapist to really talk that out, because maybe your therapist will listen to you talk about how Chrissy Teigen's tattoo was triggering for you.
And how to deal with that.
Yeah, and how to get over. Yeah, just get over yourself at the end of the day. But we have more coming up. And what's the tea, honey? Because Macy Williams from Game of Thrones, she is discussing, you know, how playing her character, her iconic character, Arya Stark, it was super detrimental for her. And we're going to talk about why it was. That's going to be coming up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, so we're back with What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. And we are finishing up with the story coming out of, obviously MTV is reporting it, but Maisie Williams, she's obviously best known for her her amazing, iconic role of Arya Stark in the Game of Thrones. And as it turns out, you know, you would think that whole entire cast is probably like living at the top of the world right now, where they just wrapped up this iconic series.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my God, this was such a beautiful experience for us to be, you know, working together and to be in a long, you know, standing character.
I mean, it's a dream for any actor.
Yeah, it's a huge moment for our actors. Well, as it turns out for Maisie, though, it had a lot of negative effects on how she viewed her body. Mm. So during a recent interview with Vogue, Maisie actually explained that her body began changing early on in the show. But she was expected to resemble a boy for Arya's storyline, which is very true. She did present very masculine throughout the entire, because she turned into a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't kind of like her sister, where she was her sister wanted to be the queen, and she was very feminine in ways. Arya was a warrior. She was like all around badass. Well, here's what she said. She said, around season 2 or 3, my body started to mature and I started to become a woman. But Arya was still very much like trying to be disguised as a boy. I had really short hair. They'd constantly cover me in dirt and shade my nose so it looked really broad and I really looked manly. She said, they also put the strap across my chest to flatten any growth that had started. I don't know. That just felt horrible for 6 months of the year and I felt kind of ashamed for a while. She went on to say that she left feeling so uncomfortable with the changes taking place in her body throughout several expanses of filming because of what she had experienced during her time on the show. But now, the Game of Thrones has ended, of course. She's free of those constraints of playing Arya. And she's decided to embrace her body, her body type that she was born with, and not the one that she was just simply playing. In many ways, she says that she decided to wear more of a feminine style with the outfits that she chose for herself, and learning to really love her body again. It's really interesting about that, because, you know, when you're thinking about these period pieces, kind of what, you know, Arya and Maisie Williams was playing on a lot of them. Yeah, as a young girl, as a child actress, and then you're kind of growing up in front of our eyes, you are changing. And there was even a moment, I don't know if you remember, when Ken from KNX was on the show, mm-hmm. and we were kind of talking.
Oh, that was weird.
We were talking Game of Thrones, and we were saying she had her first sex scene, and everyone was like, oh my gosh, should I close my eyes? Should I look? Like, what's happening? It's like watching your little sister grow up in front of you.
Yeah.
But she was dealing with so many body issues where she felt like, how am I supposed to accept, you know, kind of this natural growth that I'm experiencing?
That's interesting, because I feel like part of acting is fun, because you get to escape who you are.
Yeah.
And that could be like nice, because then you almost don't need to really think about those changes that are happening.
Well,
that's one side to look at it.
I remember we've had conversations about you kind of growing up.
You were
a tomboy.
I was a late bloomer. So that would, like, because of that, I was flat chested, as some of you might not know if you go to my Instagram.
Okay, don't throw. No, anyway. We're not advertising your breast.
But I was flat chested until I was like 10th grade. And that became a big part of my identity, where I felt like, oh, I don't feel womanly, right? I could see, though, how it could be very self-conscious. As you were talking about that, I was also thinking about the idea that I think as a woman in general at that age, it is just a self-conscious process. So, like, I don't know if she was made more self-conscious because she was having to do this. If she would have, exactly.
Puberty
is the
worst.
Let's just be clear. Like, that is an awkward phase in anyone's life, let alone if you're, like, in the spotlight like that. I think it would have sucked even more. Listen, I was young and auditioning at that age, and that felt even more uncomfortable when you're reading in front of people and you had older men judging you than getting a role where you're like, I'm in a good spot.
And then having to, now finally you're a woman and you are doing your first sex scene in the last season of this
That, if anything, show. I would have thought was more traumatizing.
I mean, exactly. I would have thought too. But actually, you know, to wrap this up, she's chosen to empower herself following the discomfort that she originally felt while filming. So, you know, it's great that she's found this way of kind of getting past those initial feelings and getting to a healthier place.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you want to find out more stories about this and read more about Arya in Vogue, head over to WeAreChannelQ.com and make sure to keep us favorited on that radio.com app.
Now, Elizabeth Warren's announced her recent fundraising results. Did she beat Bernie Sanders to snag the number one spot? We'll be revealing that coming up right after this.
So in support of National Coming Out Day and the one-year anniversary of Channel Q, woo-hoo! We are going to be celebrating all you guys that listen because we love you and appreciate you so, so much. And we want to give you guys a moment to come hang out with us. We're going to fly you and a friend out to the home of Channel Q right here in Los Angeles, California for a weekend getaway, honey. It's going to be the most fabulous trip you've ever had. We're going to take you out in West Hollywood for happy hour at the world famous mm-hmm. Abbey. Then we're going to put you up in an amazing hotel and give you two tickets to LA's biggest and sold out event of the year. It's the We Can't Survive concert happening at the Hollywood Bowl starring Taylor Swift, Lizzo, the Jonas Brothers, Camila Cabello. I mean, this is honestly the most VIP trip I've ever in my life have heard of. So come celebrate Channel Q's coming out and National Coming Out Day in Los Angeles. Go to wearechannelq.com to enter to win and for more details, because like I said, only two more days left until the contest is over, honey. You better you snooze, you lose. Don't do it. Mm-hmm. Come see us.
Yep, that's right. All right, let's get into what's trending.
Wow, you are the worst. You are the worst.
I snooze a lot, actually.
Yeah, you just snooze. Mm-hmm. That's right, guys. That's right. I'm so gone.
All right, let's get into some what's trending in the news right now.
That's right.
For anyone traveling to LA, if you have traveled to LAX or if you're a LA resident, you might know that LAX is a huge headache.
This just pissed me off.
The worst situation there. There's no other city where literally there's only one way to get in, and that's why it can be 30 minutes just to get...
30 minutes? It takes it can be an hour.
But once
sometimes.
You get there, it's yeah. crazy.
It can be an hour how you can get backed up so much.
Well, it's about to get worse. LAX is going to have curbside pickups by rideshare and taxi drivers. And instead of doing that, they do that right now. They will require travelers to take a shuttle bus to a designated lot to catch their wow. ride. Drop-offs will continue to be allowed on the upper deck of the airport. So the changes to the curb operations at the airport, they're taking effect October 29th at 3 a.m., according to this advisory from the airport. An LAX spokesperson said there will be frequent shuttle routes and that will be within walking distance from the airport. The airport has seen an increase in travelers as in the middle of a modernization project. Well, get that modernization project together. It is taking too long.
No, this is so dumb. Honestly, I don't know who was drunk and made this decision, but this is the worst thing. And guess what? I'm going to start using the Burbank one because Burbank is yeah. closer to me
the
anyway.
The thing is, it's not all flights go out of there international. That
what I don't fly what international. I don't got the money like that.
What I will say is other airports, we were recently in San Francisco, they do the pickups from one of the garages and where you can actually walk to. So maybe it'll be like that where you
but
can take a shuttle.
But who has time to that? Imagine how many bags sometimes people have, and then you got to load all that stuff up into a shuttle, and then you got to get onto the shuttle, you got to wait for the shuttle. Like, it already takes someone like me, I love to be at least like 2 or 3 hours before my time to board on the plane. I like to plan it out. Sheer likes to be there in 30 minutes. She wakes up in 30 minutes to her flight leaving. but I like to be there at least a good 2 to 3 hours before. Now I got to be up there 3 to 4 hours before because I got to wait for the shuttle.
Remind me not to travel with you anytime soon.
I can't believe it.
Let's move on to Senator Elizabeth Warren. Her campaign announced today that she raised $24.6 million in the third quarter. And it came from 509,000 donors. That's a lot of donors. 943,000 contributions with an average donation of $26. More than 300,000 of the donors gave for the first time. That's a big deal, actually.
Yeah. Well, because they probably, it probably really increased towards what we've seen recently, right before the numbers were being put out because of this whole scandal that's happened. I wouldn't be shocked if a lot of the people that were probably looking at Joe Biden, especially with him being in this, I would love to see if they are now supporting and looking at, okay, Bernie's out of here because, girls, he's having heart attacks left and right. And then Joe Biden, he's stuck into this whole impeachment thing. Next best thing is Elizabeth Warren, in my opinion. I have not endorsed her yet. I just like her White House.
Yes. But that still did not bring her to the number one spot to beat Bernie.
Of course
Bernie
not.
Raised $25.3 million, the single best reported quarterly fundraising attempt of any candidate thus far in the 2020 cycle.
Democratic candidate.
Because Biden announced actually later in the week, because we did report about all the people revealing their numbers, all the candidates, he raised $15.2
million,
which put him behind Warren Sanders and Pete Buttigieg. That's actually really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
I told you, there's going to be some more implications from this whole entire thing. It's really messing up his messaging, and he's been flubbing a lot anyway, so... We'll see, girl.
All right. Let's move on to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration today approved Gilead's drug Descovy to be used as a PrEP. So Descovy, I don't know if it's Descovy or Descovy, but PrEP.
I think it's Descovy.
Okay. PrEP, of course, is the daily HIV prevention regimen.
Yes, get on PrEP.
Yeah,
and get on PrEP. Just go to your doctor, find a great doctor that can help you and explain to you what it is. It's a beautiful daily HIV prevention thing, and you got to do it. You got to take it.
So Descovy now is the second drug approved by the FDA to be used as PrEP following the approval of Truvada, also manufactured by Gilead, who seems to own this whole space in 2012. But HIV organizations have accused Gilead of increasing the price when it came to Truvada, but cheaper generic versions of the drug are expected to become available later this year. Yeah, that sucks when these companies really try to get as much money from people who just need
it
to survive.
That's why you have, you know, candidates really speaking out about Big Pharma and going up against them. And then you have, you know, those viral clips from AOC where she's literally asking, why are some people's, you know, just medicine that they need to live 10 times more, you know, 20 times more than how you are buying it? It honestly turns out to be a scam when you look at it.
But all of this is part of the government's efforts to actually end the HIV epidemic by 2030. So it's part of this initiative called Ending the HIV Epidemic, a plan for America. They plan to reduce the new diagnoses by 75% in the next 5 years and 90% in the next 10 years. So at least there's some work being done, and it's nice to see something new coming out of this.
I think there is work being done, but it's not being done in all spaces and all groups and all. And, you know, we've talked about this, especially in women of color. We had an organization on where they talked about sometimes that type of treatment is not available in black and brown neighborhoods, or the knowledge and education is not available. So we still have a lot more to do. But that is a beautiful plan.
Well, that's what's trending in the news right now. Top of the hour. More in the next hour right here on Let's Go There. We're moving into a story about breast cancer, but not the breast cancer you think about for women. We're bringing you what you need to know about the disease in men coming up right after this.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q. Now,
October this month is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So it's a good time to, of course, learn about the disease, get checked. And a lot of times, it's marketed to women, all of this stuff. But actually, while it's rare, breast cancer will affect about 1 in 833 men, while it impacts 1 in 8 women over a lifetime. And in 2019, there will be 2,670 new cases diagnosed in the U.S. for males, and that's according to the American Cancer Society. So we wanted to talk about this today, but also a very popular, well, the queen... Ryan's queen, Beyonce.
Yeah, Beyonce's dad.
He recently announced that he's being treated for breast cancer.
Matthew knows.
So it kind of, you know, it's unfortunate that it takes like someone that's a celebrity like that, but it does end up putting this topic and this subject matter into the spotlight.
Well, it's like when we talked about Jonathan Van Ness and his coming out as, you know, he's been living as HIV positive. And, you know, we really want to deep dive into kind of what that famous face really looks like and how is it helping kind of push this narrative. Because breast cancer, I've heard about it in women, and my mom also, she had a breast cancer scare when I was younger, and that was a very traumatic and rough time for us as a family, but I never even imagined thinking about it for men, because all you hear about when it comes to men is prostate cancer. Get your prostate checked. And so it's very interesting, and I'm so excited to have this conversation about kind of the other side and knowing more about breast cancer in men.
Yeah, and we actually have two men joining us who have experienced breast cancer, and they're going to share their stories right now, and what you also listening, you should be looking out for to make sure that, you know, you aren't experiencing anything, and just to be aware that you should get checked. Bob DeVito is with us right now. Welcome to the show.
And Jim Keegan.
Oh, and Jim, they're both on together.
All, yeah, both I thought on
we were okay, party.
We are both here.
Hi.
This is Bob. How are you?
Hi. Thank you so much for being here for a very tough topic and something that you have been through. You were diagnosed, Bob, in May of 2012.
Correct, correct, yes. May of 2012, I had had experienced a enlarged lymph node, actually, in my arm that I noticed, you know, during the shower. And I thought it was unusual, and I knew that my mother had had breast cancer.
Bob, you sound a little muffled. Sorry to interrupt, but you sound a little muffled, and we want to make sure everyone hears your story.
Oh, sorry about that.
You're fine.
There you go.
Any better. All right. Technology is great when it works.
So, and then in June 2012, you had a mastectomy and many rounds of chemo and radiation. Were you, I guess, surprised when you got diagnosed? Because was it something you had heard about?
I was very surprised. I did know that men get breast cancer, but it was probably the farthest thing from my mind that you know could happen to me, especially at 49.
Yeah,
I thought I was reasonably healthy and it kind of caught me by surprise. But men don't go to the doctor unless they're really really sick, typically. And I'm glad I went when I did.
Because
if I had waited.
Yeah, it would have been even probably worse. I guess because you living and we're going to speak to Jim as well. I want to jump him in the conversation. Both of you guys have you've lived long not careers, but relationships, both having partners. How did it affect your relationships when you both, found out about living and kind of being diagnosed with breast cancer?
Right. Well, I am LGBTQ. My partner, Tony, has been really supportive throughout. We had just bought a house a few months before, and he really just really stepped up to the plate and really helped me out, both physically, emotionally, financially, So it was very good to have somebody that was there, regardless of how tough it could be,
Yeah.
And Jim, you actually found a lump with your wife when you were lying in bed. Can you share that story and how you and your wife together got through this period?
It was very important for me to have my wife with me. You really need a caregiver and a support person with you all the time. As you said, we did find a small lump while laying in bed and didn't feel like anything, like sometimes it feels like an ingrown hair or something. So my wife suggested I go and see our family physician, which I usually wouldn't listen to, but this time for some reason I did. And he also said, this doesn't feel good. I want you to get a mammogram. And then we had a whole discussion about, don't worry about men getting mammograms and so forth.
So I
went, it is. And it's, even, when you go in, for mammograms and stuff, you're in the, proverbial sea of pink. And there we are. So there's a little isolation involved and so forth. And so they did the mammogram and asked me to hang around while the radiologist reviewed it. And then they said, we'd like to take a biopsy just to make sure. So they had time, so they did it that same day. And actually, that afternoon, they called me and told me it was cancerous.
Wow.
So that was stunning. And to be honest with you, I didn't even think breast cancer. I just thought cancer, and we need to deal with this quickly. That's what we did. That was early May, and by the last weekend in May, I had a mastectomy.
Well, we're going to be right back with Bob and Jim. We're going to, discuss, what men should know when going to the doctor and getting checked and what to be looking out for. Because, like you said, it can be a surprising thing. And we would love to know your guys' experience and how you handled, the news and what men, in the future should be doing. So we'll be right back with Let's Go There.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
All right, so we're back. And, with Beyonce's father, Matthew Knowles, basically speaking out about him having breast cancer, we really wanted to have this discussion about what you need to know about the disease in men and why everyone, not just women, everyone should be getting checked. Joining us is Bob DeVito and Jim Keegan from the Male Breast Cancer Coalition. They are survivors, and we are so lucky and honored to have them on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Now coming back, you know, like I said, with Beyonce's father, Matthew Knowles, speaking out about this, and of course that was, we saw that, and that was one of the reasons why we found you guys. What do you feel like, have someone of that nature, kind of a celebrity speaking out, a celebrity male speaking out, a kind of about breast cancer in this way? Do you feel like that is a powerful thing, and more men will want to go get tested?
I think it'll get the word out to a wider audience. Someone with celebrity status, you know, they're on the television shows and the news and the papers, and it will help make men and everyone aware that this can happen to you. And maybe it'll start the conversation going in more families. Let's check our men.
Yeah, what should men be asking when they're going to the doctors? Because now I'm thinking about it. I like I said earlier, when I would go to the doctor, I would only be thinking about prostate. Like, get your prostate checked because you have to be careful about prostate cancer.
And I want to know, because I know for women, if you're only over 40, the insurance will pay for it. If you're at any age, do they pay for your mammogram if you're a man?
Wow, how does that work? A lot of questions.
No, I mean, like, but it's all connected in terms of insurance and your doctor.
I think it depends on your insurance. And in my case, I was just turned 65 when I was diagnosed. So I had Medicare, and Medicare has wonderful coverage. So there were never any questions about, you know, is this test or exam going to be covered, or this visit going to be covered? I don't know what Bob's experience was.
Yeah, I had great, you know, coverage through my spouse's employer. Everything was covered once it was made known that I had breast cancer. It kind of opened all the doors, all the gates that needed to be opened for me, thankfully, because that was a concern. I did have a little trouble with renewal during a subsequent year of my Tamoxifen, which is an anti-estrogen medication, because the paperwork said it's covered for women. And I'm like, you're kidding me, right?
That's so interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so I had to have my doctor, you know, do a peer-to-peer conversation with the insurer and say, well, you know, men get breast cancer too, and this should be covered. And they did eventually. It just took a little bit of time.
That's crazy. Can you go through the symptoms that people need to be looking out for, that men need to look out for?
Sure. In my case, I found a small little pea-sized lump right around my nipple. Most of the male breast tissue is located right around and behind the nipple and areola. Anything in that region especially, you know, is highly suspect. And there could be drainage from the nipple. You could have what they call a nipple inversion, where the nipple is starting to kind of retract or to, in my case, kind of turn downward a little bit because the tumor was pulling at the tissue.
Yeah.
Anything that's different for you, I mean, you have to know your own body. So,
right.
That's critical.
Yeah, and that's very important, just doing that daily check in the mornings and making sure everything's together. I do want to make sure we hit, about the Male Breast Cancer Coalition, because it seems like you guys both found this amazing organization where men come together and they speak about this, because I know that can be very tough and finding kind of a support group.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, for me, I was diagnosed over the phone. Finally, I got a call from the surgeon on a Friday afternoon about 4:45. And so I went home and I started Googling male breast cancer and reading articles. And I stumbled across the Male Breast Cancer Coalition. It wasn't that organization at that moment. But I found Brett Miller, who was a young man, was diagnosed at a very young age. He had actually found his little pea-sized lump when he was 17.
Wow.
And all the physicals for his sports, it's just a fatty lump. You know, you're an adolescent, you're growing, you know, it'll go away. And his mom, Peggy Miller, said to him finally, you know, that if you don't go get that lump checked, you know, I'm going to call the doctor myself or go with you to the appointment anyway. And so he was diagnosed at 23 with stage one breast cancer.
Wow.
Yeah. So they, you know, their goal was similar to mine. You know, I thought three things when I was diagnosed. One was, oh my God, I'm going to die, because people equate cancer with death. The second thing was, oh my God, I might be disfigured, because the doctor was talking to me about my mastectomy and that and what he would do. And then third was, I've got to let anybody that will listen know that men get breast cancer too.
Yeah.
And so I tried reaching out to Brett several times. And then finally I reached out to his mom. I found a number for the house there and called her, and you know, that's how we found each other. I'm not sure what Jim's story is, how he found Brett and Peggy, but...
Well, we want to say thank you for sharing your story with everyone today, because it is something that we don't talk about a lot. Bob DeVito and Jim Keegan, thanks again. We're happy that you're here to share with everyone.
And if you want to read more about their survivor stories, please head over to malebreastcancercoalition.org, and you can also check out all the information out on We Are Channel Q, where we're going to put all of this up. So once again, thank you, Jim and Bob, for joining us. We appreciate you for sharing your stories.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
And again, yeah, just go get tested. And it's for breast cancer, and also the BRCA gene, which is something that is very important as well. We'll be right back. And we're talking about dating your professor. And should you be dating your professor as a student? Is it problematic? We're getting into it right after this. We're talking about dating your professor when you're a student,
yeah.
And if it's problematic, now I think we all have maybe our own stories. I don't know about you, Ryan.
I don't have no stories, honey, because I would never. I find it very predatory, but we'll get into that. But the reason why this came about is I was scrolling Twitter, which uh-huh. we love to do, because we always ask you guys our question of the day there. And there was this moment where I saw a heated debate about someone tweeting, like, you know, it was a tweet basically saying, don't date your students, and like, professors, don't date your students. And someone responded to that tweet saying, they can, and saying something like this is very kind of authoritarian, and you shouldn't have any say about what people do. And she was talking about her own experience, how she was 19 and dated her 35-year-old professor,
okay.
And it triggered a lot of people where they were kind of responding to her. And they were saying, you know, well, was he married? What do you mean? How, that's a little predatory. Like, why is he looking? There's obviously some power dynamics there. And so I thought that would be such an interesting conversation to have here.
Yeah. So I think there's multiple layers to this, because I think in certain circumstances, it is okay. I mean, if you're two consenting adults.
In what circumstance?
Well, I'm saying if you're, I think in high school, it feels very, no. No way, Jose. In college, though, I feel like it could work.
Dated a high school teacher.
Well, yeah, that's weird, because there is it's not just an age gap; it's probably illegal.
It was most definitely illegal.
Okay, well, that doesn't work. Well, I'll be sharing actually a really bad experience I had with a teacher of mine after this. So stay tuned for that.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay. Oh. Okay.
I know we're back. I know we're back, but I didn't know if we were giving everyone the tea about our contest that we're doing. So, you know, October 11th is right around the corner. And, girl, we're in honor of National Coming Out Day and the one-year anniversary of Channel Q. We are flying you and a friend out to the home of Channel Q right here in Los Angeles, California, for a weekend getaway. We're going to take you out in West Hollywood for a happy hour at the world-famous Abbey, put you up in an amazing hotel, and give you two tickets to L.A.'s biggest and sold-out event of the year. Mm. It's the We Can't Survive concert happening at the Hollywood Bowl, honey. We're going to give you all that VIP access to see Taylor Swift, Lizzo, the Jonas Brothers, and so much more. All you got to do is head over to WeAreChannelQ.com, because, honey, you got 2 days left. Seriously, the contest is over. You snooze, you lose. What are you doing? Come celebrate Channel Q's coming out and National Coming Out Day.
Seriously. Let's get into what's trending.
You know what? Just stop adding adjectives or, like, words sad to my beautiful promos.
Let's talk about cell phone use and walking. Have you done anything, like, bad while walking on your cell phone, or like bumped into things, or
Yeah, I've walked into walls.
You have?
Yeah, I've walked into, like, I've stubbed my toe on the couch. I've never walked into a pole, but I've been close.
Yeah, I've been very close. Actually, remember in our last job, we were going live, and I was walking back from this restaurant, and I was on my phone, and I tripped and fell on my jeans. Remember, I came back to the office bleeding?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was exciting.
Yeah, that was... It made a natural hole in my jeans that I still wear. It was a great way to get the natural hole in the jean. Anyway, so in Britain, according to the study, 75% of Brits say they are guilty of walking and using their phone at the same time. So they've also had awkward encounters. They bumped into people. And we've seen those viral videos where people fall into holes. You could really hurt yourself. Or falling into the fountain.
To the grates.
In a mall. Have you seen those where people like fell into
no,
fountains?
No, I've never seen those.
Well, now.
I would never laugh at anyone's despair, you know, falling into things.
There's some failed videos where they still
get
there.
You need to take it serious. People really get seriously hurt. Oh, my God.
Okay. Well, I'm insensitive today, I guess. God. Tough crowd. Now, UK, though, is implementing its first slow lanes for people looking at their phones while walking, and they've opened in Manchester. It's hoped that these designated pathways for pedestrians will help stop people who walk with their eyes glued to their phones from bumping into each other.
Wow, you know what? It's so interesting what you see comes out of, like, just government officials, like, especially when there's, like, conversation about gun reform. But no, we need to worry about
Manchester.
People that, like, it doesn't really matter. Just anywhere. Manchester has had terrible gun issues.
Or violence,
and violence. So it's just like, it's one of those things where, should we work on this? Or maybe we should work on people not running into walls.
Yeah, so basically, that's what the UK is doing to help people not...
You never know. Trump's probably listening to this and like, oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Something else to divert from a gun control conversation.
Okay, some quickie what's trending in the news there, top of the hour. We're getting into... Oh, no, we actually... Can we do this... breaking news, kind of. Bernie.
No, we're doing our professor situation.
Oh, it's top of the hour. All right, cool. More news at wearechannelq.com.
Girl, we've been doing the show for a year.
I wanted to say the story. It just got posted in my outline. All right, never mind. Let's get into the story about the professor. Yeah, we're going to be asking you the question of the day about what is the question of the day that we tweeted?
Is it wrong if professors date their students? I want to know.
I want to know too. We want to know. And if you've ever done that, have you experienced that? So I was about to share my experience. I did not date a professor. I've never had a professor that I was into, but I will be sharing my story. Finally, I was going to share it right now, but I'll be sharing it after this.
Call Channel Q right now. 833-77-CALL-Q. That's 833-772-2557. We are the new Channel Q.
Yep, we are getting into our Q of the day. Is it wrong if professors date their students? And we have a ton of social media responses. We want to hear from you. Yeah, our number is 833-772-2557. Now, I have not dated any professors. I know this comes as a surprise to many in the studio because they think I find ways to date every type of person.
No, you like older guys. What do you mean?
No, I think it's more of that because I'm always getting myself in a situation where I'm having a fun dating story. But actually,
you like older guys.
Throughout college, I did have a boyfriend, and I didn't. Honestly, there was no one that I was attracted to that was my teacher. Not that would have made a difference. Maybe would have
because you went to school in Boston. So
Emerson College, baby.
I feel that.
But then we had a program out here. Never did I have any professors that I thought were attractive. So I just didn't experience that. Maybe, I don't know what would happen if I met someone I was like, whoa, hubba hubba.
So what story were you teasing?
So basically before college, like in between, in Montreal, there's CGEP. It's like in between high school and college.
Uh-huh.
It's like grade 12 and 13.
School?
No, no.
I heard JEP. So
CGEP.
I was like, is that a slur?
No.
It sounds like a Jewish slur.
It's not like
slur.
A Jewish American princess.
Yeah.
CEGEP.
Okay.
All right. So when I was in college and I would come back for the holidays, there was a teacher working on this documentary following the careers of a bunch of different people, which I think he interviews us every few years. And he was my cinema and communications professor.
Okay.
Now, I came back after for Christmas, and I was my first year of college. I was sophomore year, though. And he did an interview with me, and it was... And it was holiday time. And then he goes, oh, so great interviewing you. We decided to have a glass of wine. And then he basically tried to hook up with me.
Like, what did he do, if you don't mind going there?
He tried. No, we basically were just sitting there talking and having some wine, and he was just like, I've been wanting, I don't know, like, have you ever thought of us, or have you ever thought, like, that awkward
moment? Also, he took it from, you know, professional to inappropriate.
Yeah, but at the time, though, to be fair, he wasn't my professor at the time, but...
But either way, it's still a work thing.
He was, like, definitely in his 40s, and I was, like, 18, 19.
Oh, see, that's predatory. In my opinion, that's the reason why I don't think this is okay. I don't like the idea of professors, you know, dating their students. It's one, in my opinion, it's predatory. And two, there's a power dynamic.
I felt just like it was a bit weird because I came over under the guise of, oh, I'm doing this interview for a documentary.
Right.
And then he got me in a place where I felt very comfortable because I was talking about my life and things happening. And also kind of to break the ice or just to we were hanging out having a good conversation. He gave me some wine.
That sounds like a casting couch situation. It sounds also like a very kind of like model when they're on set and then the photographer tries to take advantage of them trying to say, you know, I'll do this and that story we reported not too long ago.
Yeah, but then I don't remember exactly, but I said, oh, I don't really know. Can we not do this? I don't look like, I don't know. It's very awkward when you are in that situation and you don't want to offend or insult someone or alienate them, even though I feel alienated.
Did he know a lot of people in the industry? Like, because if he's a film kind of guy.
It was in my hometown. So it wasn't in LA.
Yeah.
But it was just really awkward. And I remember leaving being like, really? Why did he do that? And by the way,
you felt uncomfortable.
I felt uncomfortable. And I was like, why did he need to do that? Because I loved our dynamic and whatever friendship we had.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, maybe a deep friendship, but I just enjoyed talking to him and sharing. And I was like, why did you need to cross the line like that? I didn't feel like I had given him any.
With that, all that happening and kind of happening to you, I guess, what do you think about our question of the day?
I think that it is okay as long as it's consensual.
Interesting.
And they're not obviously married or with someone. And even I do think these policies at school, it can get distracting, but at the same time, it's two adults.
I can debate the adults part. So we're going to dive in. Give us a call, 833-772-2557 on our question of the day.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan. The new Channel Q.
We are continuing with our question of the day, which is...
Is it wrong if professors date their students?
And we want to hear from you. Our number here is 833-77-CALL-Q, 833-772-2557. We want to hear from you. Sound off.
Yeah, actually, Kevin from San Diego is on the line. What are your thoughts about our question of the day? Is it wrong if professors date their students?
Yeah, I think, Ryan, you nailed it. It's a power struggle. It's a power issue. I mean, even if it's two adults, you got to figure, you know, depending on the age of the professor, even the student at most is 22.
Yes.
And might even be as young as 18. And I'll tell you, even if you're a recent grad student who's a prof assistant, you're at least 30. So, but again, it's a power dynamic, I think. Is it immoral? No. But is it right? I don't think so. I think it pushes the line.
All right. Fine. Go with Ryan.
What?
Thank you so much, Kevin, for giving us a call. We love you from San Diego. Shout out to y'all.
All right. Well, it's complicated.
Don't be so sad.
Wait a second. It's complicated because I do think if there's an attraction and like, what if you find the love of your life? It's just ridiculous to have these rules like that.
So you want to know the reason why I say this is because I started college when I was 16. And
that's illegal. I'm not saying if it's legal.
No,
you're two consenting
adults. But I was still, by the time I was a sophomore or junior, I was like, what? I was probably 17, 18, 19-ish? Like all around, like even if you're 19 dating a 35-year-old, there's such a huge gap. Just because you're illegally, it says you're an 18-year-old, that does not mean you're grown.
I guess I wasn't thinking as much about the age gap, more of like the position.
What else would you have thought about?
I don't know, more of like, I'm your teacher, you're my student. There is the power dynamics.
That's a conflict of interest.
I could see that. It is very hot, though, to think about hooking up with
your teacher. No, just because you have a fantasy doesn't mean you should actually do it. Because what if your teacher starts giving you, special treatment, and then also that can get very dirty.
There needs to be that conversation of this is happening. We know
you're
we're getting
too busy
into
thinking
this.
About
we
the
know
fantasy.
We know that there's a responsibility and accountability here.
Yeah.
It's just the same thing. Like we say, don't crap where you eat. However, and we all know that, doesn't mean you're, this is going to be like a long-term relationship. However, what if it could be? Wouldn't it have sucked if you cut off yourself from something that could be the love of your life or a great experience to then learn something from?
You must really think you're making a good point today. You have a lot of confidence. Let's head over to We Are Channel Q, our social media, and read some of your responses. So someone says, yes, there is a power dynamic at play that can provide their unfair advantages or disadvantages for students. Joe says, in the Me Too era, the answer to this varies by student and teacher's reasons for the relationship. Lust, love, or for a good grade.
Ooh, I thought he was going to say a good grab.
Well, that's inappropriate. JT Patrick said, I can see how it can be an issue in regards to grading and credit. However, I personally don't care if someone wants to date their professor.
So this is the thing. If it's going to be wrong, then I'd rather it be a policy to say, okay, this just can't happen, because then it sets the it basically sets the precedent. Like, there's too much gray area. It could get people into trouble. People could take advantage of either position. By the way, students could also take advantage of professors. We keep saying professors in the hierarchy can take advantage. Yeah.
Yeah, it could happen. But
both
also
sides
college
can take
students,
advantage of each other.
But also college students are young. And here's the thing. Students,
young people can be able to.
No. You have to think about this. Professors, they have gone through schooling. They have gone to build their career. It takes a lot to be a college professor. So that means you're going to let some student who is literally not even in their career, they're starting to figure out what they want to actually do when they're out of those four walls of that university. They're going to be like, you're going to let them ruin your entire thing that you've built and you've created?
Something to think about, which is why I'd rather the schools possibly create a policy saying...
Schools do actually. Most schools actually have a
but
policy.
But then I have a question. Does that mean what if the summer hits and it's after school? Are you against them people hooking up or having like a relationship outside of that?
I think it's inappropriate. I don't think... when you're in college, you barely know how you're going to eat dinner. Why do you think
that's
you can
why
make
you need to date someone older who could pay for you?
Well, okay. We gotta wrap it up. Keep. We have a couple more social media responses that we'll get to, but next, yes, queen, right?
Yep.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
On Fridays, we give our own personal yes queens of the week.
Yeah. Yes, queen.
So, Ryan.
Yes.
What is yours?
Okay, so my yes queen goes out to the living, well, not living legend anymore, but still a legend and icon, Diane Carroll, who died at 84. She is known, she won a Tony Award for Best Actress, a first for a black woman for her role in No Strings. And then she was the first black woman to have the first series on American television to star a black woman in a non-stereotypical role, which was a milestone. And of course, you know her from Dynasty and The Icon. If you want to go to my Insta story at The Slay God, I posted a clip that is so known for her. Her and Dynasty, it was like her breakout robes, huge for her. She's amazing.
I love that.
So RIP, rest in peace. You're amazing, beautiful, lovely woman.
Mine is pretty simple. It's just to everyone in my life who has been so supportive through not just positive, fun times, but also times that I'm feeling like down, and they like remind me about what it's like to have a support system. And that includes you guys, that includes Brian, and everyone else who can't be named, but I'm sending you lots of love.
Yay.
Okay, we'll be back on Monday getting into a lot of stories, including how can a parent forget their child in the car? We're going to be explaining how that actually happens.
And how it happened to me.
God, wow. All right, so that's coming up on Monday. Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Now enjoy some music right here on Channel Q from DJ Lisa Pittman and DJ Alex D. Sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay. Bye, guys.
Here it is.